Is this the reading room?
Yes, I'm Saad Manzoor.
And I'm Travis Howard.
This is Reading Room Talk. Thank you for pressing play. Welcome, welcome.
Yeah, thanks, y'all. Thanks for coming back.
Oh, welcome, welcome. Oh, man, we got a great, great guest today. So let me tell you, every time a radiologist logs in from home, a PACS administrator gets their wings. And today, we got a Kwazi Jackson, a man of many, many, many wings. How are you, man? How's it going?
Hello, gentlemen. I'm well. It's a pleasure to hear from you both. And enjoying you both, actually.
We appreciate you making the time, man. This is awesome. Thank you. Man, so let's take us back to Atlanta. Tell us about Clark Atlanta. Tell us, what was your toughest class at Clark Atlanta?
Clark Atlanta, the best time of my life. wouldn't trade college in for the world. But the toughest class, it's ironic you asked me that, given the nature of this particular podcast, but my toughest class was biology.
Oh my gosh.
Science was not my thing through grade school. It really wasn't my thing when I got to college. So that's
hilarious. Well, what did you find tough about it? Was it just like, because we just memorized. So like, I feel like you're kind of more analytical guy. So like, what do you feel like was tough about biology?
There was any and everything about science was a challenge for me. Everything about science was a challenge. It was so bad my freshman year. Oh my gosh, it was pretty bad. I think I went to class the first three sessions and I didn't go back. I ended up taking it again.
Oh wow! What kept you from going to class?
Science just wasn't my thing. I could not get into it for.
So
it was bad. Like the class was huge. It was a huge setting. I guess it was kind of intimidating too, because I wasn't successful in it in high school or middle school. So when I got to college, we're in this huge hall. It's like 75 students in there. The teacher has no idea who I am, and I always sat all in the top and the back. I was like, you know what? I'm not coming back to this class. I'll take it next semester when I feel like I'm ready for science. I literally failed it my first semester.
Oh, man. Oh, that's funny. It's better things to do in Atlanta than a biology class. So.
Unfortunately, yes. I learned that the hard way my freshman year.
Oh, that's so funny. I love it, man. So tell us, where are you from? Where's your family from? Where'd you grow up?
Born and raised in Washington, D.C.
You're like an actual native D.C. person.
I'm telling you.
An actual native from elementary school through high school, all in D.C. Anybody listen to the podcast know about Lincoln Heights. I grew up in the Heights. So born and raised in D.C. Low elementary school, Kelly Miller Junior High, McKinley Tech Senior High School. So my family's from here.
Okay.
And I think early part of my family came from North Carolina, but we're all, my mom, my grandparents, all from D.C.
That's awesome. That's super cool. So tell us, they must have a great history. So tell us, what did your family do? Like, what brought them to D.C. and what did your parents do? Tell us.
Sure. So my grandfather was in the military. He was a military chef. So he migrated here. From North Carolina when he and my grandma met and decided to start a family. Mm-hmm. So my mom is the youngest of seven. And she worked multiple jobs growing up, and she was a single parent mom. So I didn't grow up with my dad, I only grew up with my mom. I do not know my dad, actually. So my mom was the it's kind of weird when you say it, I never really saw a full family dynamic until I got to college and I saw folks who actually had their mom and dad together, because it was unusual for us. Nobody in my circle had a mom and a dad. It was either you grew up with your grandparents or you grew up with your mother. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, a lot of the dads wasn't around, but it was normal to us. So we didn't, we never thought it was strange.
Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting. So it sounds like kind of American community, is that right?
Yep. We grew up in D.C. primarily, my schools were primarily African American.
That's not the same now.
No, it's completely different now. You know? It's funny you say that because it was chocolate. It was really Chocolate City then.
Yeah. You took the chocolate with you to Atlanta. That's what
took
happened.
The chocolate with me to Atlanta.
Hey, man.
I think the moniker sticks a little bit now, but you know, then it was really Chocolate City, and it wasn't much diversity through elementary school, middle school, or high school.
I see.
But we had fun. You know, we enjoyed it. You know.
That's awesome.
Tell me your name, Akwasi, an Ashanti name. Tell me what your parents like. What the naming? Your naming? What did you ask? Why? And then what did they tell you?
Yeah. So, it sounds like you know the history. So my name means born on Sunday. I was born on Easter Sunday, actually. And again, through my youth, I really never really asked my mom, but as I got older, I did ask, you know, where's my dad or whatever. And she told me my dad was actually from Ghana, from Africa. So that's where the name came from. As well. So my sister and I both have Ashanti names. But ironically, in my family, a lot of my cousins, all have, African, cultural names. I have Isis, I have Ramses, I have Akhenaten.
Get out.
Kanata. So when my family's together, it's interesting because when I used to bring my buddies around, sometimes I would hesitate to call my cousins, you know, when they would come and hang out, we would have like a cookout or something like that. Those are our names. We all had, you know, I'm Akwasi, my sister is Akusia. You know, my cousins, we all have, you know, historical African names. So that was my upbringing.
I love that, man. I love that connection to the motherland. And, you know, sometimes in the diaspora, you may not see that, but I really appreciate that.
No, they gave it to you. And then, like, you know, at some point you're going to ask. And then at some point you can do the research and learn. So that's awesome.
That's right. It's a gateway to your history. Absolutely.
Yes. Exactly. Oh, that's awesome, man. So tell us, were you kind of, you know, interested in going into anything medicine related, or were you just kind of doing something else, or thinking about doing something else when you were in like elementary school, high school?
Gentlemen, my path is completely different than probably anyone, at least I've listened to the cast to this point.
I dig it.
It's really weird. So in middle school, my background was really in communications. So I went to a communications focused middle school. We had a radio station, a TV station, and that was my thing. So my mentor, who passed about 2 years ago now.
Shout him out.
She was a bomb. Miss Clark, Sharon Sellers Clark. She was a bomb. She allowed us a space to be super creative. We created content. We would broadcast our pseudo radio station over the intercom at lunch in middle school.
That's awesome.
It was fun for us. We would stay after school and just create videos. At that time, it was actually video, like, you know, VHS, VCR type stuff. actual camcorders. But that's what we did. That's what I did in middle school. And then in high school, I went to McKinley. And at the time, McKinley Tech was the communications program for the city. And I did all communications there. And then I was a part of a program. So folks from D.C. would know something called DC-28. I was one of the lead broadcasters for DC-28. We would broadcast all of the high school events. So I did all of the sporting events in D.C.
Awesome.
For all of the high schools, all throughout high school. And that was my thing. You know, everybody just called me DC-28 throughout high school. That was the thing. And that's what I did. And I enjoyed.
That's awesome. Oh, that's really cool. That's really cool. So you kind of had that passion and you kind of followed that to go to college and kind of pursue that as well.
Correct. Yep. So that's why I went to Clark Atlanta. So Clark Atlanta at the time had a emerging communications program. So I went on my college visit in middle school. I think I was in ninth grade. We went on the college, North Carolina, South Carolina. When we hit the ATL, went to Clark, Morehouse, and Spelman. I knew I was going to the ATL. I wasn't going anywhere else.
Wow.
It was between Clark and Morehouse. So I knew those are my only two options. Financially, I couldn't afford Morehouse, so I ended up going to Clark and pursuing my communications career from there.
Well, how did you know when you got to Atlanta and you got to those universities that you knew you were going there? What told you that?
You know, it's ironic because, like, growing up in D.C., I knew about Howard, right? So Howard was Howard, and it was an aspiration for a lot of folks in the area, but I knew I didn't want to stay home. And I don't think I really knew about the ATL until I got there. And then, like, I equated it to a different world, right?
Yeah.
Dwayne Wayne and the whole thing. When I got there, I was like, oh, my gosh. It was nothing but, you know, us there. It felt like what I knew from high school and middle school. At the time when I went and visited, it was like, man, it feels like a community. I've never seen so many, and at the time I had never seen so many educated African Americans in the same space at one time. It was like inspirational. Mentor went to Spelman. She always talked to us about it, about just the experience when we were growing up. And it just changed my life when I went there. And that was my goal from ninth grade on. My goal was to get to Atlanta. That was my only goal, was to get to Atlanta. I was like, I'm going.
Yeah. That's tight, man. You were exposed. Like, that sounds like ninth grade, you were exposed to, like, you know, have a goal, a very specific goal, which was awesome. So
Yeah.
That's really cool. So we won't get too much into this, but I feel like that was kind of like the beginning of the heyday of the Atlanta music scene too. So.
Oh my gosh. So you're 100% correct. So for me, it was a huge deal because, again, my major was communications. And when we went, Clark Atlanta didn't have a student radio station. They had a nice TV station, but no student radio station. So I was founder of our student radio station. We started it from the ground up. Like with old transistor radios. Like, you know what a transistor radio is? You can only operate it. You can only operate on a certain part of the dial, and we had to walk around campus on it. But we started it from there to the Black College Radio Station of the Year before I graduated. And we broke a ton of artists, like Alicia Keys. We broke her. I think we broke 50. Yeah, we did a lot of groundbreaking stuff there. It was fun.
That's so dumb.
Say that too, Quasi, because you have a voice. You have a voice for radio, man. I could see that. I could see that lane for you for sure.
Yeah, that was my thing.
Did you want to, like, just work for a radio station when you were done? Like, what happened next for you then?
Yeah. So, throughout undergrad, the goal was to figure out a way to get to a radio station. So my buddy of mine, we decided to shop. At the time, you called them air check tapes, right? So you put together air check tape and you figure kind of shop it around across the country, kind of like, you know, what y'all are doing now. So that was our thing.
It's like a demo.
It's like a demo, exactly. Mm-hmm. And we got a couple of hits, but it was where my mom wanted me to come back home. I wanted to stay in the A, but she was like, come back home. You're not really working. She didn't have a ton of money. I was like, I'm not sure how long it's gonna take for it to jump off. And I came back home. Came back and I worked at a local radio station for a while. It was like a paid kind of like intern doing like a lot of the grunt work at night. And I enjoyed it, but it was a grind. But it was something I enjoyed.
Man, it sounds like, you know. Get your foot in the door.
So
yeah,
I feel like, I mean, you're still kind of doing what you want to do, which is awesome. So, like, did you kind of still feel like you could, like, you know, break some ground there and back in D.C. or like what kind of were your next steps after that?
I did. I had a few connections. You know, Atlanta, as you guys mentioned at the time, was like a hotbed for music. So we had I had a few friends that was working in the industry. At the time at radio, local radio in DC, and in radio in Atlanta. So juggling both of those. My freshman year roommate actually went off to be one of the biggest artists around, well, producers, artists around. He's a pretty popular guy. So we all kept in contact.
Shout him out. You gotta shout him out.
He's being coy.
So DJ Don Cannon and DJ Drama.
That's right.
Yep, Gangsta Grills, yeah. So
Gangsta Grizzles.
Yep, awesome. Gangsta Grills. So we all came up together. We all started together in Atlanta. We kind of did the radio side and had them hone their skills, you know, on our radio shows and stuff like that. But we all ran together, did clubs and everything together for a good little while. But I just, man. Yeah, it was just, you know, I just had That's to come so home. Cool. I couldn't, my finances couldn't stretch long enough to stay in Atlanta post school. You know? I had to come back home.
Oh man, that's cool though, man. It's like that experience though, like just seeing, like, you know, you sound like you're like someone's a creator. You're able to like kind of start something from scratch like multiple times. So that's yeah. I mean, that's that talent that translates to like whatever you end up wanting to do later on in life. So like we're over here talking about music and radio, but you're on a radiology podcast. So
I know, right?
You gotta tell us what had happened.
So yeah, what had happened was my senior year, I think it was my senior year, maybe my junior year, 9/11 hit, and my mom was working at the post office at the time, I think, if I recall correctly. But when 9/11 hit, it sort of shook up that entire industry, and she lost her job. So that summer I had to get a job to pay for my senior year of college, because, you know, I had scholarships for my first 3 years, but my last year I didn't have enough scholarship money to pay for, like, you know, room and board and all that fun stuff. So I had to come home and work. So I had a buddy whose mom worked for Kaiser, and she was like, she hooked all of them, and it was all of us who went to school together. She's like, "Oh, you guys are coming to a summer job, and you know, you'll probably just be filing some films or answering phones, but." It's good money.
Oh, that's hilarious. Wow.
So we're like, cool, we'll take the job. And that's how I got introduced to Kaiser, like healthcare. And honestly, corporate America really wasn't my thing. I was totally into the entertainment industry. I was like, I'm not going to work with a certain tie. Never in my life. I will never. But it was good money. And that's what I did for the summer. And I made enough money, honestly, to pay for my senior. Like, I worked my senior year of college and paid for it out of pocket. Because my mom, she, you know, it was a while before she was able to get back on her feet, post 9/11. Just kind of shut down her entire industry, and it was a struggle for the family, you know, after that for a while.
Yeah, tough times, tough measures, man. So that's cool that you found a new opportunity to, like, you know, go do radiology. So that's funny, man. So like, so you just kind of decided to stay, or were just kind of seeing how like the finance, you know, steered you that way?
Yeah. So I did. I was working at the radio station at night. So at the time I was working at the local radio station, one of the biggest stations in DC in the evening, and working at Kaiser during the day. So I would go directly from work. My buddy and I, we would head out, come to work the night shift.
That's awesome.
For the overnight crew, we would work. I mean, we did it 7 days. Well, it was like 6 days a week. Like, we would go come from work, go to the radio station, and from the radio station back to Kaiser, right? But I did it for a good little while. And then things took a turn for the worse at the radio station. I had the sense that this wasn't gonna last too long, because we were shopping out our demo tapes. And that industry is a tough, it's a industry. Rough. Yeah, it's a little rough. The entertainment industry is a little rough. So some feathers got ruffled, and I was like, okay, I get the picture. It's not gonna last too much longer here. I need to start focusing on something else.
So after that, you see that this might work out for you, and it was providing. And you went on and you actually dug in. And you did some postgraduate work.
Yes. Yep. So I finished my undergraduate in time. And I remember vividly working a shift, and I came home, and I'll be honest, I was so frustrated because I was the first in my family to have a degree, and I'm like, I'm filing film. And no path forward in what I wanted to do. And I came home and cried. I'll be honest, I cried on my mom's shoulder.
Wow.
And she told me, she said, "You're young. You don't need, there's no need to cry. You have a long life ahead of you. But you don't know what path is in front of you if you don't just continue to work hard at whatever you've done. You've always worked hard. You know, don't stop now." And I was like, I feel like I'm a failure.
Yeah.
Because what I wanted to do, I'm not doing.
That's such great advice from your mom, because, you know, when you're that young and things don't work out the way you want them to, you feel like it's the end of the world. Like, oh my God. And here you are, this college graduate, and you work so hard, you got tuition paid for, and all those things. And now, you know, you felt like you hadn't met your mark yet.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And her advice was, You never know what might happen. And it was weird because we were a Kaiser family. The only insurance I've ever had was Kaiser, right? So we grew up in Kaiser, my sister and I and my mom. That was the only insurance. I never heard of another insurance company. That's the time I started working for it. So one day I just jumped out on the limb and I applied for, and I remember this. So I applied for what was an administrative assistant's job at Kaiser. I was like, it's just a step up from what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And maybe it'll lead me to something else. And I interviewed for that job. And the director of the department was a part of the interview at the time. She said, why are you interviewing for this job? It's like, do you think you want to be a supervisor in this organization? It's like, I don't know. Does it pay more than what I'm making now? And she said, yes, but I think you might be a decent supervisor. It'll be a step up and it'll give you an opportunity to learn. And lo and behold, she hired me as a supervisor, you know.
On the spot.
On the spot.
Wow.
And that was my first leadership role in the organization. I was 23, maybe 23 at the time.
Yeah.
And that was my start. And that was my start in leadership.
What do you think she saw in you that she knew you'd be a good supervisor, a good leader?
You know, I think I was lucky in my throughout my development from middle school to high school, the ability to communicate. Mm-hmm. And to translate my skill sets. And in the entertainment field, oftentimes you have to be a chameleon, right? You have to be able to switch on the fly from what you're doing at one point to the next point and navigate it fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. So I understood the basic radiology workflows. And then I had some leadership opportunities in college because I was a program director for our radio station. So I was responsible for scheduling and program schedules and all that type of stuff. And those are the things I communicated to her during the interview. And what she said was, those are some of the things we need right now in this department or in this particular space where the supervisor's role was. She was like, do you think you could translate that from what you did in college to what we need here? And I told her, I'll give her a try if you support me. And she said, I'll support you. Just don't quit on me. And that's what she told me.
Wow.
And I'll tell you, she supported me for the first, you know, year or two where she was around before she left. And that was a huge difference. That was a huge difference for me.
That's cool, man. So you knew how to package yourself, present yourself, and apply, or at least think of how your skill set would apply to the new gig. And it's all, I know you soared once you got in that role and you just kept going up and up. Yeah. I want to ask, like, you know, at one point you made a major pivot from the entertainment industry to now healthcare and healthcare and IT.
Mm-hmm.
How did you make that adjustment? How did you grapple with that? And how did you stay? How did you stay upbeat and own it, accept it?
Yeah, I tell you, I've been lucky. I've had some of the best folks around me to support me in my growth and development. When I started navigating the role of supervising into manager, there were folks that always provided me an opportunity to learn, and not only learn, but learn on the job, which a lot of folks do not get the opportunity to do. And I'm big on that with my team, you know, having the opportunity to learn on the job. But that encouragement, and I've had different leaders throughout the way that have exposed me to things that I had no idea. I had no idea what radiology was before I just started filing film at Kaiser. Mm-hmm. You know, some 20 years ago, and I've been with the organization 21 years, 20 years ago, just like filing film. And then at one point, someone just told me about this thing called PACS. I had no idea what PACS was when I was a supervisor. And he told me, he said, there's going to be a shift in this field. It's going to go from analog to digital. And you might want to prepare yourself for that. I know he probably does not remember that conversation, but that was the most life-changing conversation I've had with someone ever when he told me that. And he said, prepare yourself now because you never know what your future may be when that gentleman told me that.
Information.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So for some people who may not understand the magnitude of what you do,
mm-hmm.
You kind of just let folks know what you're responsible for. You're a director.
I do.
You manage people. You manage systems. Yes. What you do is so vital to healthcare. Mm-hmm. If you could just kind of give us a little snippet about what it is you do at Kaiser.
Sure. So my role now is director for PACS and systems integration. And for those who do not know, PACS stands for Picture Archival Communication Systems. And basically it takes the pixels, what we call pixels, when imaging takes place, whether it's an MRI, CT, or X-ray mammography exam, or whatever the case may be. And that's all translated and transformed into digital imaging. And we call it DICOM, Digital Imaging Communication of Medicine. And it basically makes the picture available for the radiologist. So, you know, the intelligent guys like you all, you know, you sit in front of the screen and you make the clinical diagnosis of an X-ray. So that's what I do, and that's what my team does. But it sounds really simple, but behind the scenes, there are many touch points from networks, from project management to system communication, you name it. And then the ability to manage people at times. You know, when you guys have an issue at home, you have to be able to communicate and kind of walk through an issue remotely without physically being able to touch these days the issue. And then all of the systems that come along with it. So advanced visualization. So reconstruction, reformatting of imaging, and now moving into the space of artificial intelligence. It's just it's been an evolving field.
Speak on it. Tell us, what can we expect, you know, AI-wise and like radiology that you would say?
Oh my gosh. I think for many years, people in our field, and not only on the technical side, but also on the clinical side as well, looked at AI as the replacement of people. Right, somehow replacing us, where the artificial intelligence will take over and do the work. I think now we've evolved our thinking to look at it more as of an aid, an enhancement of on top of what we do today. Right, I don't think AI, at least at this point, right, you never know what the future may hold, but at this point, it can replace the clinical expertise of a Dr. Manzullo or Dr. Howard. Right. However, what it can do is provide clinical assistance or clinical guide or clinical aid to help expedite and make your work a lot more efficient as you provide, you know, care for patients across the enterprise. I think that's how AI right now is going to impact our industry.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, because I think, you know, and if you want to keep the fear, you want to keep the fear that you'd be replaced. You know, if you want to keep that dampened, then yeah, I mean, you definitely have to push the aid, you know, that it's going to be an aid to you.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
That's how you keep the momentum going. But I got to say, you know, you're a well-liked man in the department. And it is.
Understand.
It's got to be so difficult to keep all these radiologists who can be very picky and very choosy about their screens and the pixels and the way these images come across and the availability. They can be, I bet they can be horrendous. I mean, you know, I don't know. and you do a wonderful job. All I hear are great things about you, man. It's just,
well.
And so I definitely head out to you and say you're doing a wonderful job.
Many wings.
It's no different than when we were loading boards back in the day, right? So when we had to load film on the rotoscope, the radiologist preferred the AP and the laterals in a certain order. The priors loaded a certain way. They wanted the lighting in the room a certain way. Some rads wanted the entire rotoscope moved to another side of the room because that was their preference. Yeah. You know, it's not much different than what it was back then. It's just a little more abstract now, just because we're just so spread out
Oh, that's awesome, man.
Lots of images being created, man. Lots of sensors and lots of things, lots of diagnosing going on via the hard work that you do. So to get to where you are, can you tell me what was the most difficult thing you overcame and how you overcame it?
I think the most difficult thing for me was understanding to be comfortable with what I don't know. Because again, the clinical space is not my background. And technically IT is not my background, right? I've learned it all at work. I've gone back to school and gotten my master's in business, and I have a master's now in informatics. I've gone back to get all those things, but I did it because I was comfortable with understanding what I did not know. And I do not fear being in the space and asking what I say all the time. And I tell my team this all the time. I have no problems asking a dumb question. And I think my lack of clinical experience allows me the opportunity to ask a dumb question. but oftentimes it allows me to dive deeper into what the issues are or what we need to do for issue resolution, right? Wherever there's a, you know, an issue, there's an opportunity.
Yeah.
And that's been the biggest lesson I've learned. Do not be afraid to ask questions, but don't be afraid to acknowledge what you do not know. That's been probably the biggest thing for me, Dr. Howard. I'll be 100% honest.
Yeah.
Oh, that's major.
You, you got to. I mean, you got to brush that ego aside at times and just humble yourself and ask what you don't know. And I like to move in a space where I don't think there are dumb questions. You might only perceive them being dumb because others might expect you to know, or maybe you think you ought to know. But, man, I don't know. That's a pearl, you know, that I think people might take lightly. But I agree with you. Never be afraid to ask questions.
Yep.
So tell us, so if you're, you know, talking to someone who's like, you know, struggling in undergrad or high school, trying to figure out what to do with their life, like, what would you kind of tell them to kind of get them on their way?
You know, this is funny you asked me that question. I just received a call this past week from an employee at one of our medical facilities, who works in radiology, who's been trying for many years to elevate his career. And he started off, he's in a same starting position I know I was in when I first started with the organization. And he called me the other day. He sent me a text. He's like, I'm thinking about taking these classes. What do you think I should do? And I said, don't think about it. Write it down as a goal and work towards that goal. Sign up for the class. Sign up. You have to take it. You have to do it. Otherwise, if you continue to talk about it, it doesn't bring it to fruition. It doesn't make it a reality. You have to literally write down your goals and work towards them. I told him I do it every year. At the beginning of the year, January 2, every year, I write down all of my work goals for the year on a piece of paper, literally in a notebook. I still have my same notebook. I write them down every year on a piece of paper. And you'd be surprised at the end of the year when you can check off what you've accomplished, when you actually write it down and you go back and visit it.
Yeah.
I encourage them all the time. Do not hesitate down to write your goals. And do not hesitate to call and reach out to folks who are in the space that you may be interested in, right? You might not know that's what you want to achieve or work towards until you actually start to do it or talk to folks. Mm-hmm. Don't hesitate. Use your resources, network. It's been a difference for me in my career, in my growth and development. I attest to it for anyone who reaches out to me for advice. Anyone. Networking is extremely important and goal setting.
That's awesome. That's awesome, man. That's it's gotten you where you need to go. I mean, you made it, man. And I was going to say a lot of your skills that you use now kind of probably, you know, they kind of translate over from like working in a radio station, you know, making sure like everything's running okay, making sure that, you know, people are getting what they need. I mean, these are all transferable skills that are like kind of, you know, probably just rolled over to like what you're doing now. So it kind of actually makes sense that this came together so well for you, and we feel it every day. I mean, the fact that we can log in from home, we love it.
Well, I say I'm lucky, you know, to be in an organization where we have solid leadership, you know, from you know, Dr. Ranganoth, who I loved her podcast, it was super awesome. But Dr. Ranganoth, Dr. Chang, Dr. McClain, like the leadership we have,
shout them
great, out. And yeah. I think they kind of set the tone. But you know, I get Dr. Manzul, right, who will call me and say, you know, we're having E, what are you doing? Come through, kick it, right? Come grab some dinner. But, you know, for me,
yeah, the diversity is important. Yeah.
It's important, but I get to bring my son who's seeing a doctor who's living just, you know, who's enjoying life just like I am. Yeah, you know, right. But I didn't have, you know, and it might be a small thing to you guys, but I'm telling you, I did not have that exposure.
Yeah.
No, I see the impact, man. It's wonderful. I'm glad you made that plain because it is important.
It's so important. It makes you feel connected and part of a community, and that makes you, you know, want to do better and work harder, you know. So it all makes sense, man. So we love it, man, and we appreciate you making the time, man. This has been awesome. We've learned so much. It's been Yeah, it's been awesome, man. We appreciate it. And, you know, to everyone listening, thank you so much. And until next time, stay low and keep firing. Keep firing.
Please subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes or wherever you get your pods.
To have that experience with, you know, all those gifted, hardworking African Americans in one area, just it was, I know it did a whole lot for, like, you know, just how you move in this world. So.
Oh my gosh, Dr. Howard, mm-hmm. when I say it changed my perspective on what, not only what I thought was achievable, because, you know, I went to school with kids whose parents were doctors and lawyers mm-hmm. and you know, judges. Yeah, the Huxtables, right? I didn't grow up with the Huxtables. That wasn't my reality. You know, my mom provided for my sister and I as hard as she could, you know, all her life until now. Like, my mom just went back to college because she had to drop out of college because she was pregnant with me at the time, right? She just started going back. She just went back to college last year.
That's awesome.
To get her undergraduate degree, right? The grind. But just seeing the folks, you know, just seeing it at school, it was like, man, I can really do this. Like, I can do something.
You got to see it. You got to see it. It's very important, man.